For a few minutes. So let's let our mind really sink into the understanding that all sentient beings want happiness and no one wants suffering, and that that is what lies behind all the actions sentient beings do. It's just the wish for happiness and to avoid suffering. So no matter how outrageous their actions may be, this common motivation, which is also our motivation for everything we do, is what propels all of us. And so in that way, may we have some understanding and open-mindedness towards other living beings and work for their benefit. And of course, the best way to their benefit is to have the capacities and talents and wisdom and compassion of a Buddha. And so let's generate the bodhicitta, the intention to attain Buddhahood, for that their benefit. So before we get into going through the verses again, I want to talk some more about the first step in confession, which is having regret, because this is the section, you know, that we're going through in Shantideva's text is about purification of negativities, which is an essential step before taking the bodhisattva vow. Okay. So the regret is the most important part of the purification, because if we don't have regret, then we may do the other three steps of repairing the relationship, a remedial action. We may do those, but it's not going to have any feeling. And the last one of making a determination not to do it again, we won't even think of if we don't have regret for what we did to start with. Okay? So regret is so important. Now, there's a lot of things to really unpack here. And it relates to the... it relates to the short retreat we did on forgiveness a couple of weeks ago, okay? Because there's much more to forgiveness than we could do in 2 days, okay? So when so first I'm just going to limit this to talking about getting angry at others, because we can harm others and have actions that we regret because of greed, because of attachment, because of arrogance, and so on. But let's just focus on the ones where we get mad, okay? Because this is maybe the most common motivation. Not always, but for some people, you know, kind of they're harming me, so I'm going to do something back, yeah? And, you know, we often, how to say, when we think of our negative actions, we always think of them in response to what somebody else did to us, you know, when we're talking about getting angry. So we don't think, I just got angry out of nowhere. The whole thing started with them, right? Yeah, it didn't start with me because I'm a sweet, kind person who never does anything awful to anybody. So they did something that was harmful to me. And the only way a sane person would respond to that is by getting angry, you know? And we say anger is a perfectly legitimate response. This is how everybody responds to aggression and harm, right? Yeah, I mean, this model we see everywhere, yeah? So it doesn't start with me. It started with them. So this view that we have whenever there's some kind of conflict makes it very hard for us to regret our action, because as soon as we think of regretting our part, our defiled mind flips back into, but it's their fault, they started it. Okay, so same thing when you were fighting with your siblings when you were like 4 or 5 years old. Yeah, remember that? And mom or dad or somebody came in to break it up. And what did we say? They started it. Yeah, so we're still doing this as adults. Yeah, they started it. Don't blame me. Okay, so we have that attitude as adults too. And then we say, well, okay, I got angry and maybe I did something that's not very nice, but always watch the but, yeah? Watch your butt. Yeah, but I may have done something bad, but they started it. And everybody else in their right mind will agree that what I did is justified. So therefore, why should I have regret for what I did? Because if I didn't do that, people would just walk all over me. They would take advantage of me. I lose my voice. I become the world's doormat. Okay? So even if I don't say my anger out loud, you know, I may keep it in my heart and, you know, instead of exploding, I withdraw. Yeah, because withdrawing is another way that we show our anger. We withdraw, and, you know, but it started with them, and they're the original one to blame. Okay, so why should I confess? Why should I regret? Okay, and especially if we're not the exploding type, if we're the imploding type, which men and women both do, but women have been socialized to do that more, then we think we don't have a problem with anger because we don't yell and scream and throw things. Yeah, we sit there. Glaring, you know, not speaking. Yeah. Do you remember the times at home over the dinner table? Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah. And, but, you know, we don't have a problem with anger. And we're sometimes very afraid of our own anger. Like if I even start to speak, or even if I want to talk about the situation, if I start to speak, I'm just going to lose it because my anger will take over. And then I will yell and scream and go hysterical. And I don't want to do that. So we become afraid of our own anger. So we stuff it down, put on alternatively an angry face and a sweet face. And then the anger comes out in all sorts of other ways in our life. Yeah. That's what they call passive aggressive. Okay. But regret? First, they apologize. Then I regret my part. Okay. So, even when we're doing the visualization at the beginning with the Buddha in front and us surrounding by sentient beings and the sentient beings that we've harmed in front of us, you know, because one part of our mind is thinking, yes, I want to confess and have regret for it. But it's another part of our mind just says, no, it's their fault. Okay. So how do we get around that? How do we get around that? Yeah. So the issue with negative actions is not what the other person did. It is not an issue of who started it. Yeah. With your siblings, it is. But with karma, it doesn't matter who started it, okay? And sometimes the person may have wanted to help hurt us and had that specific intention to hurt us. Sometimes the person may have not had the specific intention to hurt us, but they just had the intention to fulfill their own wants and needs. And what they did hurt us. Or a third alternative is sometimes it was neither of those, but we imputed a motivation to an action that they did. So it doesn't, from the karmic viewpoint, it doesn't really matter what started it. Yeah. What mattered is what went on in our mind. Because what started it, what happened with the other person, you know, if they had the intention to harm us, they're creating negative karma. If they were acting out of greed, and a byproduct of that is, or greed or attachment, and a byproduct of that was harming us, still, it's their negative karma motivated by greed and attachment, okay? If they had no intention at all to harm us and we imputed an incorrect motivation on them, that's no karma for them. Okay. So their part in the whole thing is their part. It's not our part. Our part is what we did, you know, with our motivation. Yeah. Okay. So it starts with our motivation and then it comes out physically or mentally, because we don't communicate, so that's the verbal part. I mean, it comes out physically or verbally. So our mouth doesn't move, or we don't write, you know, or we don't hit somebody or whatever. Just first, it always depends on the mind moving first. Okay. So, yeah, somebody harms us. Somebody, here's where the thought training comes in, you know, it's so relevant here. So you take, you know, like we chant the 37 verses of practices of bodhisattvas all the time. Okay, so there's one where somebody announces all of our faults to the 3,000 worlds. And what are we instructed to do at that point? With a loving mind, speak of their good qualities. What? Okay. Speak of their good qualities when they did that? Okay. So usually what we do is we speak of their bad qualities. And they ruined our reputation. So we speak of their bad qualities to everybody, to the 4,000 worlds, not just to 3,000. We're going to speak bad words about them to everybody we possibly can. And we do this, of course, with a virtuous motivation so that other people don't get tricked by that person. Okay, so we're not really taking revenge. We're just warning other people, right? Right? We really have a good motivation for speaking badly about them. It's to warn other people so they don't get sucked into this guy's bad stuff. Yeah, baloney. You know, it's our revenge. Okay, but we... Are you getting what I'm saying? How we sugarcoat things and lie to ourselves about our real motivation? Okay. So we, you know, tear their reputation apart. And then later on, and sometimes it might take us 5 or 10 years to realize this, we say, oh, I hurt somebody else. I spoke bad words about them to the whole world. I ruined their reputation. Yeah. Unnecessarily. Because this person is not 100% evil person. They make mistakes. And sometimes other people need to be warned about this person's misdeeds so they don't fall into it. But I don't need to have a harmful intention of retaliating and getting even and causing them suffering in order to protect other beings from falling, you know, into their trips. Okay, you getting this clear? Okay, if something isn't clear, stop me, because this is quite important, yeah? So, yeah, so where was I? So we realized we did something that was harmful, and we have regret for it, yeah? And then at that point, we, you know, speak the regret. We generate the regret in our own mind. And, you know, we realize, okay, I may not be responsible for the whole quarrel between us, but, and somebody else was responsible for their part, but I'm responsible for my part, and I regret the harmful intention I had towards that person. And I regret what I did to retaliate, because my actions of harming somebody else harmed me. How did they harm me? Because it placed on my mind stream the seeds of negative karma. And those seeds of negative karma will ripen in my own suffering. Whatever suffering I caused somebody else by what I did, they're experiencing, and it's just the suffering of this life. But when I act with a harmful motivation towards somebody else, and all four parts of the action are complete, and we'll get into that tomorrow night in the foundation of Buddhist practice teachings, then I'm the one who's going to suffer the long-term consequence of what I did to this other person, even if the action's done, even if they're suffering and I feel pleased with myself for getting my revenge, I am still going to suffer again in the future, possibly, and especially if I have completed the action with all four parts, you know, then I'm going to have a lower rebirth because of this. Yeah. And an unfortunate rebirth is not a small thing. It's not, I'm going to be reborn as a gnat that lives. How long do gnats live? You know, a day or two, maybe three. So it's not like just 3 days of suffering as a gnat, but it's once we fall into an unfortunate rebirth, it's very difficult to have positive karma ripen again, to have a good rebirth like we have now, where we can practice the Dharma. Why is it hard for good karma to ripen? Well, first of all, it's very difficult as a gnat to create good karma. Yeah, you don't have the capacity to generate a Dharma motivation or, you know, a good motivation. You're just, you know, buzzing around trying to get food and, you know, doing whatever. And, you know, so the gnats can't create positive karma in that lifetime. If they created positive karma in a previous fortunate rebirth, let's say as a human being, then to have that karma ripen when they're in a gnat rebirth is going to require having some kind of virtuous something in the mind at the time they die when they're a gnat. Okay. How likely is that for a gnat to have some kind of virtue in their mind at that time? Difficult. This is why when bugs die or animals die, why we say mantras over them and blow on them, you know, because it's an attempt that something, some connection with the triple gem, you know, is in their mind at that time that could possibly help them generate, that could possibly help a virtuous karma ripen so they have a good rebirth. Okay. So it's not just a few days, you know, okay, I tore somebody's reputation apart. I'll be born as a gnat 3 days, big deal. Then I'll come back and I'll be just like I am now. It's not that easy. So when we see, you know, that harming others is harming ourselves, that when we harm others, we are causing ourselves suffering, then we have very deep regret for what we've done. Yeah. And at that point, we're not worried so much about who started it, because we want to just cleanse this negative karma from our mind stream. because we're concerned with what kind of suffering results it's going to bring us. Okay. Now, dare I try and explain something that Lama Zopa said to somebody and take the risk of everybody flipping out? Okay. So, my teacher, you know, Zopa Rinpoche, somebody went to tell him, when I was in Mexico, I met a woman who, her brother was a priest who sexually abused her son. Okay. So she was very upset about this whole thing. Because it harmed her son. She didn't find out about it until he was an adult, because he didn't tell anybody. But when she found out about it, she was just enraged, and she really felt very negative towards her brother. You know, even though it was her brother and she loved him, I mean, she just was like hating him. So she went to Rinpoche to tell him about this and ask for advice. Okay, and Rinpoche's advice to her was, apologize to your brother. And she came to me because she said, I have no idea what in the world Rinpoche was saying, because why should I apologize to my brother when my brother sexually abused my son in a relationship of trust? Why should I apologize? What in the world is Rinpoche talking about? Okay, so her conversation with Rinpoche had happened a few years before that. And she said, you know, this was something I just pondered for a really long time. Why did he say that? It seems like the opposite thing. My brother should apologize to me. He should apologize to my son. So finally, what she came to was, I was so full of hate for my brother. And hate is not a good mental state. It creates a ton of negative karma. And she said, what I need to do, she came to the conclusion, what I need to do is apologize to my brother for hating him. Okay. So she went, talked to her brother. She was kind of hopeful that maybe her initiating something might lead to him apologizing. It didn't. But she said she apologized for her anger to him. And it really helped her put her anger and hatred down. It kind of cleared things away for her, even though he didn't own his part of it. Okay. So I told this story one time. I was giving a talk about anger in Madison, Wisconsin, to quite a large group of people. It was a public talk. And I told this story. And that's why I'm saying I am risking things telling it again now, because the people at that talk totally exploded. They got so mad at me. You know, one woman was saying, you know, I counsel people who were sexually abused. If you heard about this priest sexually abusing somebody, you need to report it to the authorities, you know. And I tried to explain, first of all, it was in Mexico. I don't know the name of the other person, let alone know the person. I don't know how to contact his sister who told me the story. Yeah. That didn't matter. This person, she was inflamed, you know. And then other people jumped into, you need to report this. How dare you say that she needs to apologize to her brother? You know, her brother needs to be arrested and imprisoned for sexually abusing a child. You know, and you are totally incompetent as a Buddhist teacher saying that she needs to apologize to her brother. You know, I mean, what you're saying is outrageous. It is crazy. This is incompetency. And I heard about this for quite a while afterwards, and word spread around the Deer Park people. Oh, guess what happened when she gave a public talk and said this? Okay. So, yeah, people were really enraged. And so, you know, some of the people, you guys are okay, I think. But some people online, maybe you're angry, okay? But I'm trying to explain this according to how I think Rinpoche meant it, yeah? And how another, because the thing is, and this is where it relates to forgiveness, unless we can put down our anger, we cannot really forgive, yeah? Or should I say, unless we can forgive, we can't really put down our anger, because that's what forgiveness means. As long as we hold on to our hatred and we're furious at somebody for what they did years ago, we're the ones who are suffering. Okay, we're the ones who are suffering. So putting down the anger is not a sign of weakness. It is not saying what the other person did was okay, because what the other person did in this case was definitely not okay. Yeah. And it doesn't mean we forget it. Yeah. Certain atrocities we remember so that we don't commit them ourselves and so that we can try and prevent others from committing them in the future. But the apologizing, the forgiving, is our way of healing our own mind regarding the past, instead of carrying the past around on our back like a bag of, you know, mosquitoes that are constantly biting us, or, you know, like a, what did the Catholics beat themselves with? Some kind of, yeah, no, but there was some, they wore some kind of hair shirt. What kind of hair was it made of? Horsehair? Yeah. And so it's scratchy and uncomfortable and painful. You know, if we don't forgive, if we don't, you know, let go of our hatred towards them and apologize for our part of it, then it's like wearing that horsehair shirt all day, all night. Yeah. And if we want ourselves to be happy, letting go is a really important part of that healing process. Okay? So this is why I think Rinpoche said that. Yeah? And this is kind of what that woman, the Mexican woman, had told me that she had kind of come to as a conclusion in this whole thing. Yeah? Because she was just torn up by what her brother did. Yeah. Okay. So I hope this is clear. It's challenging to think about this way because we have tended to nurture our grudges for a long time. So it's challenging to think of putting them down. But just think about it. And, you know, how healing that could be. Because when you put it down, then you can start freshly. You don't have to drag the past around with you. So I never, when I first encountered Zen Buddhism, you know, kind of Zen mind, beginner's mind, you know, you look at everything freshly. And it's like, what are they talking about? I did not understand that. You know, you just look at it freshly like a beginner. Huh? But this is what I think that phrase means, is we don't carry around the negative things from the past and let it color our present. Because when it colors our present, we suffer. And then we do things that make other people suffer. Yeah. But being able to put the past down, then we can approach things without all those filters. Okay. And we've talked a lot about the filters. We've talked a lot about how somebody just did a BBC about it. Who was it? Was it you? About when we get angry, we develop a caricature or a cartoon figure of somebody? Was it you? Yes. Okay. And so, yeah, that's what we do. The sum total of this person's life is this one action. And we have solidified all, you know, who they are as a human being into one simple image. This one action they did that was horrible, unforgivable, disgusting, and harmful. And they have no redeeming qualities at all. Okay? And so that keeps us miserable. Now, I got another email yesterday. This one happens to be from another friend, a Dharma student in Mexico. I have a nice connection with the Mexicans. So she was saying in Mexico, looking at the pandemic, it's been really horrible there. She said the government is doing nothing to help the people. And the economy is cratering, and the virus is spreading, especially in Mexico City where she lives. And she said, I'm in a safe situation, but I can't stand what's happening to the people around me, seeing all these people die unnecessarily. And that's what we're seeing here too. It's not any different, okay? And she said, I'm so furious. And, you know, what can I do? Yeah? So I'm going to relate that. I'm hooking all sorts of things together. So today, you know, I looked at the news this morning, and our dear president has done what many of us have thought that he would do, which he is suggesting delaying the election because of the virus. Because he's against vote by mail, he says that that would invalidate the election. People don't want to go out and vote if there's danger of getting the virus, and he doesn't want them to vote by mail. So let's delay the election. Yeah, he doesn't have the power to do it, but that doesn't matter to him. He doesn't have the power to do a lot of the things he's doing, but Congress lets him do it, and his own party lets him do it. Okay, so he's floating this idea as a way of invalidating the election, and my guess, that gives him more time to send federal troops into American cities. And we are on our way to a dictatorship. Okay. Maybe I'm exaggerating. I hope I'm wrong. one of the things where I hope I'm wrong. But this is what it looks like to me. Anyway, okay, we hear this. We look at him. What an awful person. How can he suggest delaying the election? You know, people are dying here just like they're dying in Mexico because he didn't take responsibility and be proactive. And, you know, and even now he's spreading misinformation about the virus, which is causing people to get sick and die. And 150,000 Americans have died because of the chaos in the government's lack of response, you know. So it is so easy to get angry, isn't it? And make this caricature, because this is one more thing that reinforces this caricature of who he is, right? Yeah? And that caricature is he has never done one positive thing in his whole life. He is not a real human being. He doesn't want to be happy. He has absolutely no empathy. And there's reports that he never shows empathy for people suffering. You know, he is beyond what being a human being is. He's just some kind, he's a sociopath. And then, of course, we start psychoanalyzing. You know, I'm not Mary Trump. She couldn't do it. She was a psychologist, but I'm not, but that doesn't stop me. Okay, so he's a psychopath, he's a sociopath. I don't know what really what the definitions of those terms mean, but it's negative, and so it must pertain to him. Okay, and just everything about him is negative. All the people who side with him, everything about them is negative, you know. And one of the Republican congressmen who said, I'm never wearing a mask. Nobody has to wear a mask. He tested positive for the virus. Ooh, we got you. You got what's deserving you, what you deserve. And he was talking to the attorney general yesterday without a mask. Ooh, maybe William Barr is gonna get coronavirus too. Wouldn't that be great? We get our revenge for that totally incompetent attorney general who is totally screwing up the country. Ooh, okay. Yeah. Do you see how? Yeah. That's how the mind goes. And does that have anything to do with the reality of who those people are? Has nothing to do with reality of who they are. I'm just talking conventional reality here. I mean, ultimate reality is another ballgame. There's no self-existent person there to start with to have all these, you know, these characteristics. There's nobody there, you know. But even conventionally, you know, okay, these people are doing actions that I find horrible and disturbing and harmful for a country, for a nation, for millions of people. Yeah, whether it's in Mexico or here, it doesn't really matter. But does that mean these people are 100% awful and that my anger is justified and that my anger is the only possible emotional response I could have to what they're doing? Yeah. No, it doesn't mean any of that. It doesn't mean I have to be angry. It doesn't mean that my caricature is who they are. Who are they? They're a suffering sentient being who wants happiness and doesn't want to suffer and who has no clue about what the cause of happiness is and what the cause of suffering is. And so in their, you know, mistaken way of trying to get happiness, they say these things and they do these things. They happen to be in positions of power where what they say and do harms a lot of people. And none of that is good. And we need to speak out against it. But we don't need to hate those people by developing a caricature and justifying our hatred and anger towards them. Yeah. What we need to do is, you know, pray for them somehow at some time in this life or future lives to learn about the law of karma and its effects, to develop a conscience, to develop even a little bit of compassion. So, and you know, so that they can stop harming themselves by harming other people. Yeah. And if they could have that understanding of karma, they wouldn't be doing what they're doing. Yeah. So may at some point they get that understanding of karma. May they just develop a little bit of empathy or compassion. You know, that would make them think otherwise and stop that behavior. Yeah. And so that's why I say, you know, I have the aspiration to give a Dharma talk to the whole U.S. Congress, including the executive branch, too. Get them in there, and the judicial branch wouldn't hurt as well. You know, get all those people in there and teach them. So this is my fantasy. You know, I know it's not going to happen, okay? But if it doesn't happen this life, in some lifetime, may I help these people to gain the right view so that they can stop creating the causes for their own hellish rebirth and so that they can stop harming so many other living beings. Okay? So if we think like that, then we aren't suffering with the frustration of being furious and not being able to change the situation. Because we know the situation can be changed. We may not be the person to change it in this lifetime. Maybe somebody else will teach them or, you know, may they have a dream, may something happen where they come to this sense. But in a future lifetime, at least may I help, you know, help them. Okay, so things may not change quickly, but I will do my part and at least pray to do my part to help these people, as well as to help all the people who are suffering from the actions that they're doing in this lifetime. Okay, so in that way, taking a situation where we are angry and frustrated because we're angry and we can't do anything, and we change it into the Dharma path by generating a different kind of motivation and attitude, and by stripping away this false caricature that we have imputed on other people. Okay. And then in addition, if we can meditate on their lack of inherent existence, that's even better. Then we see that there's no person there to even impute this false caricature on. Okay. Okay, clear?
I have a couple of things regarding your excellent talk. It was really helpful for me because some years ago when you talked, shared that story, you know, how to forgive, Lama Supa's reply. I actually had a bit of misunderstanding because I took it as karma, you know, somebody who experienced such as abuse, that is my karma, and I have to apologize. The only way is to reconcile is to apologize for the action I may have done in previous lives because it's clear that I haven't abused somebody sexually, for example. Uh-huh. And but that was always a sticking point because I can't see it, right? Yeah. It's right. Not visible for me. Yeah. And But then there's another thing stuck, because I can't feel or can't remember the anger specifically towards a person that abused me, right?
In this life.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And many people will have experienced that they may not have direct anger towards a person because it may be a family member they have trusted. So there's a conflict there. But later on, there's something interesting happening. You project, and the anger is within you, and then you project something on others who may do you some harm that is not similar, but then since the anger's there, you become angry. And so it comes, how to say it?
your anger gets expressed in a different way.
Yeah, in a different way.
And but so, it's still anger, and you're still suffering from it.
Yeah, certainly. So, yeah.
Yeah.
There is a lot to purify.
Yeah.
Apologize.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even more good reason to develop apology there. Yeah.
And also what you said about seeing, you know, when we are harmed in a certain way in this life, to say, it's very likely I did something similar to other people in the past life, and I can't remember it. And it's not the same person I am now, so I don't need to hate myself for what I did in a previous life. But I just recognize that the law of karma exists and it functions. So, and take that as a way to guide my future behavior. Yeah, because I see my present suffering is due to who knows what I did in a past life. So now I'm going to be very conscientious and not act in, you know, in harmful ways in this life towards others, because I don't want to create any more karma to experience the same kind of abuse I experienced in this life. Yeah. Yeah.
Say you have a suppressed group like Afro-Americans or something like that, and they may get angry for all what they have experienced. Mm-hmm. In this life alone, and maybe carry the anger, what they have learned from their grandparents or parents. But there's no belief in karma, so the only way to reconcile is just to admit the anger they have felt towards white people in this life. That's the only way, right?
Yeah, it seems like. And to try and take down the caricature of all white people are like this, or try and take down the assumption that you will be treated in a certain way, even though that assumption may have been correct for many, many interactions with other people. Yeah. So this whole thing of trying to have a fresh mind, and it's very difficult to do if you don't have a spiritual framework for doing it. Yeah. It's a difficult thing, because then, you know, there's so much to be processed. Yeah, it's not easy. You can't just say, oh, you know, I'm not going to, you know, my group has been oppressed for so long, and now I'm just going to drop all of that. When you have taught, when you have experienced and been taught by your family that you are part of a persecuted group, there is such a strong filter to see everything that way, and that filter is constantly being reaffirmed as correct due to what society is doing now. Yeah, then it's difficult. It's really hard.
This is such a radical teaching. It's a radical point of view. I mean, that's why you got the feedback, kickback you got then, and I was thinking about the various harms of my life when I've gone for like therapy, the encouragement to get angry as a part of the process. Mm-hmm. So I'm not faulting the therapist. You know, they were helpful. But the view, even from the helping people, is so different from this.
Yeah.
That to move from, oh, I have a right to be angry. I need to be angry. I need to acknowledge the hurt. I need to acknowledge the anger. I need to express the anger. I need to work it out, blah, 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 blah. To make that leap as a Dharma practitioner takes some internal work.
Well, you bet.
And also, I think from as I've been thinking about it in terms of all of the social problems that I want to correct in the world, to think that I can even extrapolate this teaching to whole groups of people. Like, it's so personal. It has to be done internally, one person at a time who's ripe and ready to hear this teaching, who's clear enough in their practice. And so that you keep teaching it and the seeds land in people, some who are ripe, some who are not, but that you have the courage to keep passing it on. I really want to appreciate you for deeply, because it's not easy and it is really radical.
It's very radical.
Yeah. So I just want to acknowledge
that. Very radical. And to really say explicitly for the record, I'm not saying that everybody is ready to do this and that everybody should do it. People are at very different places. Yeah. At very different places. And you have to be at a certain place in your spiritual practice and a certain place in your healing process where you're really tired of the anger and you're tired of the pain, you know? And when those conditions come together, then this approach is really profound, yeah? Before those conditions come together, do what you need to do that helps you. I'm not saying everybody should adopt this approach. Yeah. That's very important for people to know. Yeah. As it is, actually, with all the Dharma teachings we hear, you know, we hear incredibly profound Dharma teachings sometimes. Does that mean that we should go off and practice them immediately? Yeah. No, it means those teachings were planting seeds in our mind stream. But we have to create the internal capacity and the causes and the foundation in our practice so that when we practice these high teachings, they will be completely suitable for us and the process will, it's always difficult, but the process will go ahead, you know. Whereas if we hear very profound teachings and then we think, oh, I'm going to practice these right away, and we don't have the foundation, then, you know, it doesn't work. So this applies, you know, in a psychological ways and spiritual ways, all sorts of ways, okay? So people, whatever we're doing, we have to start with where we're at, you know? We don't start with where we want to be. We start with where we're at, yeah? And so that involves sometimes a lot of self-acceptance, because often we would rather be somewhere than we are. But to say, I am where I'm at, and the good thing is I am going ahead slowly but surely. And I'm not competing with anybody else to get anywhere. Because the Dharma path is not a competition path. Yeah. So you really understand when you hear this how radical a Dharma view is compared to regular society where competition is everything. Yeah, vengeance is good. You know, anger is justified. You know, it's a totally different approach. And that's why it said that when you're really practicing deeply, you're like a white crow. Yeah. How many white crows do you see? Yeah. We've seen a white turkey. But we have ravens around here. You ever seen a white raven? Yeah, they're few and far between. Okay? So it's like it's swimming upstream. So we accept where we're at. We're in the waiting pool. Yeah, remember the waiting pool? Yeah? So we're sitting in the waiting pool. Yeah, we're paddling a little bit to get to the other side. There's not much pushback. Maybe a little wave, but we're paddling. We're getting there. And then somehow, we'll, you know, at some point we'll be able to, you know, go to the next step and get in the swimming pool in the shallow end where we can, our feet touch the bottom. Okay. And then slowly we just progress. And then maybe you become one of these surfers who were in Hawaii with these big crashing waves, which I will never do. Okay? But it's an analogy for what we're trying to do in our Dharma practice. Okay? Yeah. Okay.
Someone says, I wish I had heard this teaching about 6 years ago. My apology would have stopped a vast amount of negative karma, but I might not have been ready to hear it. Very powerful teaching. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
And then there's some questions.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay, so somebody wants to know, did the people who were upset with you for telling the story about abuse ask for forgiveness because of how they responded to you?
Oh, no. No, I got emails from them after that. You know, you've got to call the Mexican authorities immediately and report this. And it's like, I have no way, you know.
And then any advice on how to not fall into spiritual bypassing? It seems easy to misinterpret Lojong teachings and suppress or bypass difficult emotions and act as if one's transcended them.
Okay, so this is where, when we talk about, there's one mental factor called parapachana. It is translated as, sometimes it's vigilance, alertness, introspective awareness, okay? And it sometimes comes with mindfulness too. But to avoid the spiritual bypassing, we need to monitor our mind, and that's what this mental factor does. It monitors the mind. Okay, so what am I thinking right now? What am I feeling? And this mental factor has to be incredibly honest with ourselves. Okay, sometimes there are things we just do not see in our own behavior. We are totally blind. Sometimes there are things that are tickling our mind. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that isn't so good. But actually, it's the other person's fault. You know, I was right after all. I don't feel so comfortable. Shut up. It's really their fault. What you did is okay. Okay? You know that mental factor where you have that little tickling feeling like something's not right. And then another part of your mind jumps in and says, oh, but I'm right and they're wrong and da-da-da-da-da. So this monitoring of the mind has to be very honest. And say, oh, I felt that little tickle. I need to stop and really look. What is going on? What am I thinking? What am I wanting? Yeah. And so that means stepping back. And it's not always immediately clear what is going on in our mind. We feel the little tickling, you know, But I know for myself, okay, if I can make up some example, I feel a little tickling, yeah, and I'm angry. And I'm saying, this person is manipulating me. Yeah, I really hate when people manipulate me. You want to push my buttons? Try and manipulate me. I just go bananas, okay? So this person's manipulating me. I can't stand it, yeah? So I'm angry, yeah. But I suppress the anger because I'm trying to be a good Buddhist. So, no, this person isn't really manipulating me. Maybe, yeah, they said all my negative qualities to the 3,000 worlds in an attempt to get me to compromise and do what they want. And what they were doing was all manipulation. But it's okay. It's not too bad. I'm not really angry. So I justify it. I don't acknowledge my anger. Okay, so I'm repressing my own anger. So if I'm stuck there, then I'm stuck, okay? So I am aware when I feel the little tickle, you know? So part of my mind is saying, but it's their fault, what I did is okay. A little tickle thing, you check again, okay? It's kind of like, you know, my teacher's sitting there on my shoulder saying, check up, dear. You know, what Lama used to say a lot, check up, dear. So, okay, I'll look. So then it's like, okay, I'm mad because he's manipulating me. I found out why I'm mad. Okay, he's manipulating me. But that's okay. I should be mad at somebody who's manipulating. But then I have to ask, why does feeling manipulated bother me so much? Because actually, feeling manipulated isn't a feeling, is it? It's a thought about what I think the other person is doing. I say, I feel manipulated. I'm not feeling manipulated. What am I actually feeling? I'm feeling powerless. That's what I'm actually feeling. I'm feeling powerless. I'm feeling confused. Yeah. What is it I really need? Yeah. I need some clarity about this situation. How am I going to get... So this is the conversation that's going on inside of me. Okay. How am I going to get that clarity about this situation? Okay. I have to think, you know, I'm feeling helpless. What in this situation is what is account is the outward thing that I am taking inward to mean that I am helpless and powerless? And does that outward circumstance really mean that? One question. Second question, am I really helpless and powerless? Well, no, there are things I can do. Yeah. Some of them may be difficult. Some of them may be almost impossible. But there's ways for me to transform my way of looking at the situation so that I don't get myself trapped by saying, this is an inherently existent situation that is from the outside manipulative. Okay? In other words, there's just a bunch of causes and conditions that are going on that I am labeling manipulative, and as soon as I label manipulative, I go bonkers. If it's manipulative, then I'm helpless, I'm powerless. If I'm powerless and helpless, what do I do to remedy that? I get angry, because anger gives me a feeling of having power and ability to do something. So I get angry. Does my anger really give me actual power? No. In fact, often I make really stupid, bad decisions under the influence of anger. Yeah? Because I'm imputing this person is manipulating me, and I'm not putting up with that, so I'm going to go to them and say, I won't even say beep, 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 you know, and get off my back, and don't you try and do that to me, and I'm not, you know, that's what my anger wants me to do. Is that going to solve the problem with the other person? Yeah. If they are manipulating me, maybe, you know, they'll probably get defensive. If they aren't manipulating me, with their intention is not to manipulate me, they're going to look at me like I'm out of my mind. And I am. You know? So it's kind of like, okay, let's step back. I feel powerless. What are things that I could do? What are internal resources that I have for how to work with my mind and develop a better motivation? What are resources in the community that I can deal with? What other people can I talk to that will help me work out this problem with somebody else without creating a big hoopla? Okay, so opening the mind for other ways to solve the problem rather than digging my heels in and being quite miserable about it. Okay, but it, you know, and so this is in response to the question of how do we keep from suppressing it to actually acknowledging it and figuring out some way to solve it. It's that little mental factor that notices when there's that little tickle, that saying, is that really what's going on? Yeah. And then realizing that there's another important element in this is realizing that blame is something that should be abolished from our language and our way of thinking. So it isn't like I feel manipulated, I'm going to blame them, or I'm going to blame myself. You know, kind of like misinterpreting karma. Oh, they're harming me because I did something in a past life, so I'm guilty, I'm bad. See, it's all my fault after all. No, let's get out of that habit of blame and fault. It's not an issue of blame and fault. It's an issue of people's ignorance and people being overpowered by their ignorance, overpowered by their affliction. And people who are overpowered by afflictions are suffering. People who are suffering are worthy of compassion. They aren't worthy of anger. Okay? So we can feel compassion for them. And we may act very assertively or even aggressively, but our mind is peaceful. And our mind cares about those individuals. It's a tall order. It's difficult to do. But this is bodhisattva practice. So this is how we are training ourselves. We are not there yet where we can do that, but we are training ourselves to try and think like that and practice these methods. Now I want to add another little thing. Okay. I was watching this video. His Holiness recently had a dialogue with people from London's Metropolitan Police. Okay. So the police officers asked for a session with His Holiness. Yeah. So you can see on the screen, you know, because it's all in the COVID mode, so they're doing it by Zoom. You know, two big screens filled with the small pictures, each one of police officers. There must have been almost 100, I would say, of them, okay? And, you know, what's our current image of police officers? Okay, you got your current image of police officers. So it seems like these people are talking to the Dalai Lama. I mean, what do they have in common, you know, and what are they going to ask him? It was so beautiful. And what I got out of it, a lot, the questions they asked, many of the questions, His Holiness's translator didn't understand the way we from a Western culture would understand the meaning of those questions. So sometimes His Holiness's answers didn't fit what we would see as the question. That didn't matter at all. It didn't matter at all. These people were so touched by having that session with His Holiness. But what really affected me is, because they each asked their question one by one, and when each, you know, police officer asked their question, they were the face of one whole screen. They were no longer the little bit. They were the face of the whole screen. And I saw police officers in a totally different perspective by listening to their questions. Yeah. One said, asked His Holiness, do you ever doubt yourself in the role of the Dalai Lama? And what would you say to other people who doubt themselves and their capacities to do their roles? Meaning himself. I mean, that's a pretty potent question, yeah. Somebody else said, what recommendations do you have when we're in a situation and we have to act physically against somebody? Yeah. One person said, what advice do you have for women who are in a predominantly male occupation, like policing? You know, they asked really good questions. Yeah. I'm trying to think what else. You know, like, what do you recommend we do when we feel bad about something that we had to do in our line of work? So this whole thing for me, it was like, oh, police officers are human beings. Yeah, they aren't the caricature that I have from my Vietnam days and the present days. That's not who those people are, you know. Because these officers in London, I mean, they were dealing with protesters, because London is, the Black Lives Matter situation in the state is affecting all, in the States, is affecting all of Europe too. I mean, it in a different way, because London is now, looking at all the colonialism and racism that involved. Okay. But it's like, wow, these police officers are feeling human beings who are, they're trying. They care about what they're doing. They have some integrity. you know, and they're doing a hard job and it's confusing for them and their emotions get out of control sometimes. But they realize that and they're looking for help from His Holiness, even though they're not Buddhists, nothing like that. Yeah. So it was really, it was quite profound for me listening to this dialogue. Yeah. So, yeah. So I'm bringing in lots of points from all different sorts of things. Yeah. Past and present. But, they fit together, you know. And when I say that Dharma should apply to everything in our life, you know, this is it. You know how it does. So we're still on verse 32, which we will do hopefully next week. But you know how I am. When something comes up, then it is there and it comes out. Do you have any more to add?
It was very, very illuminating that you shared so openly how you work, how your mind actually works, you know, how you meditate through things. And it's always encouraging. Thank you so much.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, my crazy mind. What can I say? You know?
How you positively transform certain situations.
Yeah. Well, you acknowledge that you have a crazy mind that's under the influence of afflictions. That's the first thing you got to do, you know. And then you kind of try and talk to it a little bit and try and reason with it a little bit.